You're listening to Stranger Than. This is a McGill Daily and CKUT collaboration. The words you're about to hear were written by Lucy Cameron. The voice is Ali Duchu.
My whole life, I have been followed by a man I do not know. Not a whole man, but his face, black and white, from a poster I saw for the first time when I was very young. A few years later, I saw the poster again, then again, and then at regular intervals, so that it made a home for itself in my mind among the familiar faces of sitcom characters. I saw the face more than I saw most of my uncles. It was as familiar to me as the dirty faces of dead presidents on American bills. I am 10 years old, sitting in a windowless waiting room in Tijuana, staring at the face on a 4x5 foot poster nailed to the wall. I remember the face most clearly from this room, but also from broadside posters and billboards rippling across small ceiling-mounted televisions. The quality of the picture is terrible. To me, at 10, Tijuana is a kaleidoscope of the pixelated face. One day out of every year, my family packs a cooler into the minivan and drives 2 hours south of the border of Mexico to renew our immigration papers. There is almost certainly something illegal about the system that my parents have worked out. But this is pre-9/11 and the economy is good or up, whatever that means. So it is generally easier to get away with these things. I mean, relatively. The border is a maze of cement buildings and zigzagging ramps. The border officials all have the same closely cropped haircut and the impeccable personal grooming of serial killers. They generally fail to hide their disgust at the human chain of grandmothers, howling babies, and angry young men who fill the waiting rooms and stand in line for hours in the hot sun, fanning themselves with their papers. Women walk through lanes of traffic, dangling glass hummingbirds in car windows. My sister buys dirty, partially opened packages of Chiclets. I pass the time flirting with the idea of never having to return to my school again if we get deported. The whole thing is a nightmare. There is never a moment without a car horn. We arrive at 9 a.m, and my parents herd us through lobbies and lineups, carrying folders with copies of documents suggesting our legitimacy. They are confident in their case, it works every year, but the border officials are surly, and the flexion of their power is subject to change with their mood. I am 10 years old, and I understand this. Last year, a man in front of us in line was tackled to the ground and beat up by 2 guards. My mother put her hands over my brother's eyes and asked me about the book I was reading. We never get deported, but there is no clear sign that things have gone according to plan until we are back in the Previa, rattling home through unfamiliar neighborhoods. I asked my dad how it went, and he says all good. So it'll be 1 year before we are back in Tijuana, land of the face. Wheat pasted, nailed, and projected onto every two-dimensional surface. There is one poster every 5 feet. It is almost comic, or Hollyan. The design changes slightly each year, with the addition of more fine print and minor changes to the cast of supporting characters. Some of the other pictures have congratulatory excess through time. The picture itself, the face, never changes. In the photo, he is young. His mustache is full and dark. It is 1987 and he is in his mother's living room, but it has been cropped away to frame his face. He is healthy, mid-50s, but looks 40. No gray, plump cheeks. His skin is naturally oily, but here he is actually sweating. The picture was taken after a big meal at his cousin's wedding reception, one of the last family gatherings he attended. Already some of them had begun whispering nervously, when they thought he was out of earshot and slightly, but perceptibly, shrinking away from him in the buffet line. Here, he is drunk and glistening on his second helping of pork. People were rarely bold enough to photograph him, but everyone who saw this picture remarked that it was an excellent shot. He was relaxed, his gold tooth twinkled in the dark corner of his mouth. Miraculously, his wife teased him, smiling for once. We do this for 11 years, my family and I, the border, the visas, the tense omission of certain facts, and we are never deported. Until one day we leave on our own, for good, and the annual trips to Tijuana and the labyrinth immigration offices stop. After this, I don't see the face for years, but still think of it sometimes, when I see missing persons posters. There is something disarming in a face that has been clipped out of another photograph, isolated and terribly enlarged, as if the face itself were surprised. The next time I see the face in the flesh again, I am not prepared. I am at a bus station in Albany, and the familiar poster is nailed to the wall above the only water fountain. Somehow I have stared at this poster for years without ever noticing the reward, and here I consider the price of the face for the first time. For $5 million, there must be ordinary people with nothing better to do out hunting the face. Perhaps they have hung the poster up in their homes, one every few feet in the style of the U.S. Immigration Department in Tijuana. When I was a kid, I was scared to think of what the face had done. I did not dare to ask Jeeves about the name that I knew belonged to the face. I assumed its crimes simply exceeded my imagination, extending to some new alphabet of sadism. Now I am older and more naive. I want to know. Nothing is too dark for me, I think. I have seen so many movies in the intervening decade point five, and privately entertained an image of myself as an embittered, wisecracking detective. So when the sign in Albany asks me, "Have I seen this man?" it occurs to me that I would like to. Where are you, face? I try to figure it out while waiting for the bus to be refueled. Perhaps you are swimming somewhere, under trees, hiding from satellites. The driveway to your compound is miles long and dotted with impenetrable checkpoints that make this Nordic border crossing feel like a picket fence, like joining has never been so easy. I imagine you are with me, face, in this future, in the bus station in Albany. You are banging on the plastic window of the vending machine, trying to dislodge a package of Pop-Tarts you have paid for. You do this softly with the heel of your hand, so as not to draw attention to yourself. You don't want to be that guy. Still, the toaster strudels hang on the fence, caught in the coils of the machine. I see the familiar villain, enemy of the state, reflected in the vending machine's warped plastic, furrowed with hunger. You are older, ashen, and haggard. Your cheeks are sunken with pockets. Back on the bus, you fall fast asleep next to me, and when we see each other in the morning, your wrinkled visage barely recalls the $5 million 1987 headshot. They won't give you up. You shrug. With tunnel eyes, you smile, and I smile. Relieved at the clarity and precision of your non-pixelated features. I can't explain how I know you are already dead, but I would stake your life on it. Your bones are nestled in the cracked concrete of an abandoned construction site in the desert. A foundation, a footprint for a small house. But there is no structure extending upward. Only a patch where cacti don't put roots. What has come of it all, face? Now you understand that, among other things, it is ironic to me to see you after all of this time in the middle of the night in Albany, New York. You are an art installation, at home here. A real politician of the place. You rarely visit anymore, so this is some comfort.